You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We are thrilled now to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in our friend, CBS Sports NFL insider, Jason LaCanfora. J-Locks, last night, the Warriors set a record, 73 wins in the regular season. Kobe Bryant went out with 60 points, and all anybody in the world was talking about this morning is the NFL after this huge trade, seeing the Rams go from 15-1. What do you think of this trade?
Well, desperate times call for desperate measures, right? I mean, that's the reason that these things happen is that teams find themselves in a predicament where they are completely bereft of options at the single most important position in any professional sport. And the Rams have systematically sort of whiffed on that position, whether free agency or the draft. And, you know, some of it's bad luck. I mean, Sam Bradford and the injuries and yada, yada, yada. And so they needed a quarterback. And I mean, I wrote about this at the league meetings. That every time they talk about Case Keenum, just had me further convinced that not only are they going to get a quarterback, but they'll trade up to get one if need be. Now, I didn't necessarily think it'd be to one, because A, I don't think they had to go to one to get one of the top two guys, and B, you know, that's a big jump. As you said, 15-1 is pretty significant. But I'm not stunned at all that it did happen, and I don't think either of those guys are ready to be real contributors right now from day one. But if you look at that scenario in L.A., I'm guessing Carson Wentz is their opening day starter.
So taking that all into account, would you expect the Cleveland Browns to follow suit and take Jared Goff number two? So for the second year consecutively, quarterbacks go 1 and 2 in the draft.
Yeah, I believe they would have taken Goff regardless. If they stay at that pick and they make the pick, I've heard pretty strongly, and as I wrote this week, I've been given strong indications from all my reporting that that's who they would take. You know, that's who they would have took anyway. So all the talk about, you know, them and Wentz and having to move to one to get Wentz, they're perfectly fine with, as numerous executives had said in the story I wrote, that, you know, that's sort of their dream scenario, is let all that play out, you know, let somebody jump up there to get Wentz, and then if, you know, Goff's there at two, and if, look, if there's, obviously the Browns have needs all over the place, so if somebody blows them away and there's so much value in that second pick that you trade it, so be it. But if they make that pick, I have a very difficult time seeing a scenario in which it's not Jared Goff.
How strongly, because a lot of people are reporting, you know, you and some others reporting that it's definitely Wentz for the Rams. Others are reporting it's definitely Goff for the Rams. When do you think we'll have that definitive answer? Do you think it'll come before the draft? And what is the information that you're hearing that leads you strongly to the Wentz side of things for the Rams?
Yeah, I mean, what I've heard through this point of the evaluations, even before they made this trade, was that Carson Wentz was a prospect that they were very high on, and that he would be sort of the guy they were targeting if they made a move up, if there was a move up that made sense for them. Could something change in the next couple of weeks? Certainly. They don't have to make the pick yet. You know, they still haven't had their full organizational, you know, sit-down meetings and all that stuff. But the bottom line there is Jeff Fisher pretty much sets that board how he wants to set that board. I mean, that's, you know, Les Snead is something of a functionary for him. And there's not a whole lot that happens there at the top that Jeff Fisher isn't okay with. And, you know, I, from what I'm hearing, I expect them to take Carson Wentz. I'm not going to guarantee it. I'm not going to say there's, you know, 0% chance that they do anything else with that pick. But clearly this move was made for a quarterback. So there's this idea that we don't know who we're taking. I mean, I guess they sort of have to say that, but it's completely and utterly bogus. You don't do that unless you know. What's that?
I said you don't do that unless you know.
You have to know.
You better
the
know.
The only reason you do it. The right. only reason you do it. You know, and the idea that you would do all that and then, like, you're not taking a quarterback, and you're, but Case Keenum and Nick Foles are the guys you have under contract. I mean, please. You know, so they can do all the song and dance and shucking and jiving they want, but this is absolutely positively born of their utter putrid state at the quarterback position.
Jason, this really shakes up a lot of things, and I guess that puts, if quarterbacks go 1 and 2, is Laremy Tunsil a shoe-in for the San Diego Chargers at 3? And then what happens to, probably on most people's board, the most complete football player in Jalen Ramsey? Where could you end up seeing him go?
Yeah, I can't imagine the Chargers would pass on Tunsil. I wrote about that this morning as well. I mean, I get that they got some money sunk in King, Dunlap, and maybe Barksdale is a decent scrappy right tackle. But let Dunlap and Barksdale go fight it out for right tackle. And then for any team, they need three tackles. I mean, if any team, they need three tackles, they need about 6 guards and about 7 centers. Their offensive line is like collectively the drummer from Spinal Tap. Like, people just spontaneously combust, you know, like they just, it's over. They play one snap and they disappear. So they need to stockpile. I can't imagine that at 3, and they're trying to coax, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 more years out of a Phillip Rivers who wasn't mobile in his prime. And they couldn't run the ball last year either, and they drafted a running back real high, but there weren't a whole lot of holes for him. I can't imagine they would pass on Tunsil. I get that they have needs on defense as well, but you have a chance to get the consensus number one kid in the draft and fill a major position of need and a critical position at that. Yeah, I think that they would take him. You know, Ramsey, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of the evaluators who I know and trust, I mean, everybody likes the kid. But I don't know that they love him the way the media presents that they love him.
I've heard a lot of people like William Jackson just as much.
Yeah, I mean, the people who I know and trust that don't have a dog in the fight tell me that's awful high to take a safety. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, Ramsey's a safety. They're like, he's not around the ball enough to be a corner. He's not necessarily a true cover corner. I have people who think he ends up being a safety. So that's really high to take a tweener. Now, I get the body type. I mean, there's a lot to like. I get it. I'm not saying he's not, you know, in a draft that doesn't have a lot of blue-chip guys, a blue-chip guy. But the idea that he was ever in play for the first overall pick was laughable. I mean, they were trading that pick or they were taking Tunsil, and that was it. There really was nothing else to discuss. I mean, look, could Jacksonville take Ramsey? Sure. I mean, I would tend to think in this scenario, Dallas needs pass rush so bad. Joey Bosa just seems to me like kind of their guy, somebody who Jerry could, you know, have.
What about
fun
Ezekiel
with.
Elliott there?
I don't know that they take a running back that high. I mean, I think they're pretty cool with what they've got in McFadden. I think they like the fact that they found value there.
Okay.
They've kind of done it with a couple different guys now for a few years. They've got to get better defensively. There has to be some bite in that defense somewhere. I mean, basically, how long has Ware been gone? This will be going on the third season. They haven't replaced him. They haven't come close to replacing him. I think at the end of the day, Rod Marinelli gets his guy there and they get some pass rush.
All right, talking with Jason Lockin for CBS NFL Insider. So your article yesterday was about the Browns and about their love of Jared Goff and that he would be the guy for them. So let me ask you this, take it a step further. If Goff goes 1, do you, from your information, believe that the Browns see Wentz as a franchise guy, or do you believe that the Browns, if Goff is off the table, will be absolutely looking to trade back with whoever does love Carson Wentz?
I think you'll know who made the pick by what they did. You know, as I reported, there's a lot of sort of the scouts there who think it's kind of close, and some probably favored Wentz at the end of the day. Some of the analytics would point to Goff in that if you follow the PFF crowd, they seem to be a little bit higher on Goff. But, again, at a time when a lot of these quarterbacks are kind of being lumped together, I just know Pep Hamilton made it, you know, from what I'm told, it didn't seem all that close in his eyes. And I don't think it's a leap to say that Pep Hamilton and Hugh Jackson are not looking at the quarterback position somewhat in lockstep. So if Pep Hamilton doesn't think it's close, then, you know, he's the guy who's going to be calling the plays for this kid. Then, and they don't take, and they have the opportunity to take Goff and they take Wentz over Goff, then I think obviously you can draw your own conclusions there as to what happened.
So, but let's say that the Rams take Goff.
Okay.
And the Browns are faced with Wentz, who you're saying that in the eyes of, according to your reports, people inside this building is not on the same level, that you think that in that case, are they a very likely trade-back candidate? And who are you hearing is interested in Wentz? Is the Eagles' interest real? 49ers, would they be a candidate to move up?
I've heard more about Chip Kelly being enamored with getting his rocks off by reinventing Blaine Gabbert and, you know, sort of being the guy who salvaged Blaine Gabbert more so than he likes these kids in the first round. That doesn't mean he couldn't take Connor Cook or somebody the top of round two. And the Eagles thing, I've always thought they doff protest a little too much, and that they'd be fine at the end of the day trading back, getting more value, and getting a second-round pick, which they covet and don't have, or staying there and taking an Ezekiel Elliott if he's there.
Yeah, I don't know. Do they have the ammo to move up from eight, you know, to two?
Look, I've written extensively about this, and there are plenty of people in Philadelphia who, you know, think I'm a lunatic, but they've got $30 million tied up in the quarterback position.
Agreed.
They don't have a whole lot of ammo to move up. There isn't a whole lot separating these groups. And if they were ready to mortgage, you know, look, trust me, John Robinson was marketing the fact that Howie Rosen was desperate to move to one. Whether it's true or not, I think that served both parties and had a lot to do with the Rams ultimately making this move, because they were convinced the only way to make sure you get, you know, your quarterback is to do it at one. I don't know how true that was. I mean, that's a team that is all in. So if they really wanted this to happen, trading future picks would not have scared them. I mean, if the Eagles wanted to make this move, they could have. And there have been conversations there. I think all the pictures of the owner with these quarterbacks when they come to town, you know, how everybody figures out what restaurant they're in, and they're just so overt about it. I mean, maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but I think it's all been kind of bluffing. And, again, they can get value for their pick by making you think they're going to take a quarterback at a time when it looked like one of them still might be there. That, you know, I think it had a lot more to do with that.
So if you were looking at it right now, based on what you know, the Browns, do you think they're staying at two or trading out of two, or is that completely dependent on who the Rams take? Like, if let me say, you said it wouldn't be 100%, but do you believe that if Carson Wentz goes first overall, it's as close to a lock as it could be that the Browns would take Goff at two?
I mean, unless somebody blows their socks off with an offer, in which case, you know, they'll come out and make the case that, you know, our evaluations show that there's just so much value in getting these additional picks, and, you know, we're nowhere close. And you could sell that pretty easily, and you could make a cogent argument for that. I just don't know who's diving up there. If it's not Howie Roseman, I don't know who it is. I don't see it being the 49ers. I don't know who makes that move. If in your original scenario, if for whatever reason Goff goes one, then I think it would be Wentz versus the top, you know, two defensive players, Bosa or Buckner, and that would sort of be the big three, and then they'd have to make an evaluation, you know, if the guy who, at least in the eyes of many of the coaches, would have been the second pick quarterback is still worth more than what they think, you know, those two potential difference makers on defense could be.
Never a dull moment in the NFL. Anything else you're hearing that might shake this draft up?
Not more than this.
Did you see
that? Hard to top this right now.
Did you see that reported three-way trade between the Browns, the Broncos, and the Bills? Is there anything to that?
What is that supposed to be?
It was the Browns gave pick number two to Buffalo. Denver got Tyrod Taylor. The Browns ended up getting
You've said enough.
Okay.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah, the Browns got like five picks out of the deal and whatever.
I wouldn't invest any energy.
So you haven't heard that hasn't been burning your ear at all?
No.
All right.
Nope.
J-Lox, for people who happen to be listening to the show that are also Baltimore sports fans, tell them about your new venture.
That sounds like the ultimate oxymoron. Baltimore sports fans living in Cleveland, listening to Browns daily.
Listen, there are people that listen to Browns. I guarantee there are people who live in Baltimore that are listening to this show right now. Guarantee. We get people from all over. G.I. George, our guy G.I. George is I think from Baltimore.
Okay. Well, hey, look, I will not turn down an opportunity to plug my podcast.
Plug.
Be More Opinionated on iTunes, a Baltimore-centric podcast. It's not just sports. And actually, we've been a whole lot more Orioles than football lately. But yeah. I gotta come up with a draft preview show here soon.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if we've had any guests who would interest people. I don't
Josh
know.
Josh Charles?
The actor Josh Charles.
Come on.
With his work.
Didn't he just
Kenny
become
Rosenthal.
Isn't he a super delegate now?
He said, I got to call him. I don't know if he was. If he was like busting balls with that tweet or not, I haven't talked to him in a week. I gotta find out if that's legit.
It seemed legit.
If it is legit, he should do a documentary on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Always, I thought one of his finest performances in "Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead."
That was good stuff.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Movie. The dishes are done, man. Great film.
That is a classic. I think of that line all the time.
All the time. Whenever I do dishes, that's what dishes I come up with. Done, did man. You come up with the Be More Opinionated name? I like it.
We sat around, me and my knucklehead buddy Jerry, and he had a bunch of ideas. I didn't really think about it. We were sitting at the dining room table. And then I'm like, yeah, what about Be More Opinionated? And then, like, the voice of reason, my wife, Lauren, was like, I actually like that one. I'm like, yeah, maybe that'll work.
Strong. Good caricatures.
But it's too many characters. Like, but on Twitter, it just comes out as Be More Opinionate. It's, like, too long for the D. Can't get the D in there.
Oh, for a hashtag, they limit you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's limited. So, I don't know. Or,
cut out, what
or
about
the guy who set it up, my idiot friend Jerry, just, you know, left it off or something.
Why don't you cut out the E of more?
Yeah, we've gone back and forth. And now we can't even figure – we talked about that, but now we can't even figure out how to get back in there and change it either way. You're talking – you're not – you know, we're not talking Mensa candidates here.
Yes, indeed. Well, J-Lox, appreciate all the inside, the updates. And to summarize, if you're just joining us, he believes that the Rams will go Wentz, and if Jared Goff is on the board, the Browns will take Jared Goff unless someone blows their socks off, which is always – I've never had my socks blown off. I imagine that would be something spectacular.
Both, brother.
That's right.
Sounds good.
All right, always a pleasure. Follow me on Twitter at Jason Lockett 4 for the very latest around the National Football League. Thanks, brother. All right, we'll be back with more of your calls. Plus, we'll get into our mock draft now, pick 17 to 24 on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. The Cleveland Browns are hosting a four-day single-game ticket sale starting at 8 p.m. tonight. Don't miss the chance to secure tickets to watch your Cleveland Browns host the New York Giants, the Dallas Cowboys, the New England Patriots, the New York Jets, the San Diego Chargers, and, of course, their AFC North rivals, the Steelers, Bengals, and Ravens. The four-day single-game ticket sale begins tonight at 8. The sale will end on April the 18th. Visit clevelandbrowns.com, the Browns mobile app, or call 440-824-3434. That's 440-824-3434 for more information. It's a pretty good home schedule. I'm not going to lie.
It is.
Patriots, Cowboys, Giants, Jets, Chargers, Steelers, Bengals, Ravens. In the words of Larry David, pretty good.
I don't know what that means.
You should.
I mean, I know what pretty good means, but.
It means like pretty good. Pretty good. So, by the way, so this was interesting. Jason Lockenford just retweeted this. So, this is a mock draft that just came out. It's 590 The Fan.
I saw it. Cleveland Browns take DeForest Buckner, second overall.
Mark Bridge Lillibridge has been around the NFL for over 20 years. Player, working in player personnel, certified contract advisor. After talking to scouts, top-level NFL executives, and media as part of the Football Dealers Draft on Tap, here's his full first-round mock. Rams Goff. The Rams had to get to number one because Goff was the player the Browns would have selected. They wanted Goff. They go and get him. Browns 2, DeForest Buckner, which is the only defense player I said I would take if we stayed at 2. Now, what gets real interesting here is you have to go to pick 16 to find Joey Bosa to the Detroit Lions. Pick 16 for Joey Bosa.
Okay.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either.
I just thought that was interesting. Yo, what did you think, Gibbs, of what Lock and Fora had to say?
About which part?
About the picks, the Browns relative to Wentz and Goff. It sounded like he was pretty certain that there was a clear hierarchy here.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're moving up to number one, there's one player that you have on your mind. It's not even two players. There's one guy you want if you're willing to give up what you did, as the Rams did.
Yep.
So the question is, who's that guy? Is it Goff or is it Wentz? And if it's Goff, you know, what are the
then it sounds like there's a lot of uncertainty around our pick. It sounded like if it's Wentz, it's Goff for us. If it's not, if it's Goff for the Rams, then who knows?
That's the question. I just wonder, it goes back to my comment in hour one. Are you going to find someone to dance after all this? Or are teams scared off by how much it took to move up to that spot?
I think it's a different move now. So I don't think it's not going to be that kind of a game-changing move.
It's still going to be a lot, but it's not going to be nearly what it was to move up to number one.
Correct.
And I don't think we're going to know until LA picks at number one. I mean, that's going to be that 8-minute stretch from when the commissioner says the Cleveland Browns are on the clock to those chimes.
Yeah.
I mean, it is wide open.
It is wide open, but don't you think there'll be many names, many scenarios that, of course, always happen on draft night, but the same way that the contingency came out immediately after this trade in favor of Carson Wentz, and by 12 noon, it had shifted that Goff was the guy, not Wentz, that there's gonna be sources that you're gonna have to that will fall on deaf ears, and then there's gonna be those that, you know, we believe are probably truly have an ear to that room to have a solid understanding, maybe a 65% chance or 70% chance to be right on what they do at one, which would allow Cleveland to have a little bit more of a laser focus on what they do at two or the contingency plan if it is Jared Goff.
Now, the one thing I don't expect to happen this time around are agent leaks. Both Carson Wentz and Jared Goff have the same agent.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be one being positioned ahead of the
Who
other.
Who was their agent?
Like
Condon?
We usually see. I don't know.
Okay.
But I know they're represented by the same agents.
Gotcha. Okay.
So interesting stuff
that
there.
That guy's in for a payday.
Yeah. What if they go?
I mean, not initially.
What do you think? If
I mean, 3% of $22 million.
Yeah, but you got the number one, number two pick.
I know. What's 3% of $22 million?
$700,000.
Okay, that's over 5 years. So yeah, I guess having two guys, that's 14 over 5 years.
Yeah, but then you're hoping they sign their next contract.
I know.
When that's happening, you're getting that every year.
Correct. I get it.
Not bad. Not a bad scenario.
Not a bad scenario.
Not a bad scenario to be in. I'm not. Sign me up for that scenario. I wouldn't mind. Sign me up for that one. So we've got, by the way, picks 17 to 24 coming up on our mock draft. It's definitely still a crazy day. We'll take your phone calls.
I've got a couple. I've redlined a couple of mine.
You've made some changes.
Well, I wrote down my initial
mm-hmm.
going off a gut, and then it's like as I dive into other mocks and I see the names that match up, I go to, you know, team needs and what makes the most sense. I've then since redlined. I've dropped a couple guys down. I've bumped a couple guys up.
I like it. It'll be very interesting to see. Well, we're going to get into that as well as take your calls 216-578-0850 when we return here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgur, Matt Wilhelm. Time for a little mock draft. Great music, Gibbs. We are at pick 16 now, or pick 17, I'm sorry. So that means, Matt Wilhelm, you go first.
This is one of my black lines. I initially had the Atlanta Falcons going wide receiver.
Okay.
But I blacklined him, dropped my guy down a little bit, and I have them taking Kevin Dodd. Out of University of Clemson.
Guy whose name is on the rise, and I haven't worked him into mine. I thought about it multiple times in this one, and I think I know places he could jump in, but not there. I'm going. They need some help with the linebacking core. Darren Lee, the linebacker out of the Ohio State
University. He's off my board. He's long gone off my board.
He's long gone. So is the next guy, I think. At 18, the Indianapolis Colts. What made that defense great back in the day? Robert Mathis, Dwight Freeney. They need a pass rusher on the edge. I think Leonard Floyd, the linebacker out of Georgia, could be that guy. Slips a little bit because of his size, et cetera. And there we go.
And at 18, I have the Colts addressing their offensive line to protect and keep healthy in Andrew Luck. And I have them taking another Buckeye. I think a Buckeye you have off your board in Taylor Decker.
Yep, he went 16th on my board.
Yeah. So I have the Colts addressing the tackle position.
Yeah, something that they need to do. All right, pick number 19, the Buffalo Bills on the clock. A lot of people starting to think some momentum building for Paxton Lynch at this spot.
This is true. I am not going Paxton Lynch. I'm staying along the offensive line. I'm going to go with Michigan State tackle Jack Conklin to the Buffalo Bills.
And he was off my board at number 10 to the New York Giants.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm going at pick number 19. First, what I'd call shock of the day. Who in the NFL thinks they can coach a guy that might have a little bit of issues but is an immense talent and get the best out of him? Who thinks he's that guy? I think Rex Ryan thinks he's that guy. And so Rex Ryan goes to the board, and he goes and he says, Robert, whatever your name is, Kamdiche, you are going to be that beast to replace Mario Williams in my defense, and I'm going to pick you at number 19.
At number 19, that was number 20, right? The Jets?
That was the Bills. That was the Bills. Rex Ryan.
Bills. Okay, gotcha. Okay, and with pick number 20, that's you on the board, bro.
With pick 20, the New York Jets looking for another compliment on their defensive line. Shaq Lawson can rush off the edge in that 3-4 defensive end / outside linebacker from Clemson.
Shaq Lawson, for me, got a higher draft grade. He went to the Saints at 12 for me. I have the New York Jets going defense, and this is another one of my black lines. I'm not going to say who I had them taking, but who I end up having them taking is Noah Spence, a name that was very hot, a top 10 pick going into the combine. I have Noah Spence to the New York Jets at number 20.
He was under intense consideration for me with Indianapolis, with Buffalo, and with the Jets, but ultimately I did not go that direction. All right, number 21 now, the Washington Redskins on the clock.
The Washington Redskins are going to, I contemplated have them going wide receiver, but I almost felt like a couple of the wide receivers that are going to come very soon here for probably both of us were kind of fit the DeSean Jackson mold, and I think they need a different guy. So I went defense. I'd go Sheldon Rankins, the defensive tackle out of Louisville.
For the Washington Redskins?
Correct.
So did I.
Did you?
Sheldon Rankins, defense tackle, Louisville. Good call there. All right, now we're going to get into a little bit of fun. 22 Houston Texans are on the clock. They've got DeAndre Hopkins. Now, Laquon Treadwell's out there on my board, but
he's,
I think they
mine.
Go for the burner, Corey Coleman, out of Houston from Baylor University.
See, for me, I'm going wide receiver here as well. To me, Corey Coleman is a little too much DeAndre Hopkins.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with a little bit more of the speedster, and this is where Will Fuller goes off the board to me, to the Houston Texans, the true burner down the field with the fast 40.
Will Fuller to the Texans there. Pick number 23, you're on the clock, the Minnesota Vikings.
Many people have Michael Thomas linked to the Minnesota Vikings to give Teddy a weapon, but this for me, and I know he's off your board, this is where Josh Doctson comes off the board for me to the Minnesota Vikings and gives Teddy Bridgewater a legitimate weapon with size. Michael Thomas, I have him a little bit lower in my mind, even though I'm pro Buckeye. I think he's a back end first round, early second round pick for me.
Okay. This is where Theodore Bridgewater gets his weapon, and Theodore Bridgewater gets Laquon Treadwell, who slipped down the board a little bit, and he goes 23 to the Minnesota Vikings. Cincinnati on the clock. They wanted a receiver, but they're not going to push it. They don't feel like Thomas or Fuller or the guy. They take Jaron Reed, defensive tackle, Alabama. Demente Pucker, or I think that's there, Pecco, as the defense tackle there alongside Geno Atkins, struggling, I think, last year. They want to get another force in the middle of that defense.
I have them going wide receiver.
Okay.
It is not Braxton Miller. It is the last of that top tier that you had go a few picks ago, and that is Corey Coleman.
Okay.
So Andy Dalton does get a weapon to add to that offense. They're going to want to bring as much continuity for Andy Dalton as possible. You have A.J. Green, you have Tyler Eifert, but need to replace Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, and you go out and get a guy that you believe can be productive. Not Braxton Miller, even though people have him linked there. He's more of a project, and that's why
you don't see that as much anymore.
And I think SB Nation in the third round actually has Braxton Miller going to our Cleveland Browns in
the
third round.
Yes. So he's fallen after that slow combine.
Correct. So Corey Coleman out of Baylor to the Bengals.
Interesting. So there it is. So that's where we are. We're through pick 24. We'll wrap up the first round and then the first pick of the second round on tomorrow's show. Interesting. Anything stand out there to you, Gibbs?
It's an awful big run on wide receivers for a position that I'm not sure warrants first-round grades.
Really?
Yeah.
So I have
I have a total of 3 wide receivers going in the first round.
And I have 4.
That's not that many, I don't think.
So you have not had Will Fuller come off your board yet, correct?
Will Fuller is not off my board.
Michael Thomas is not off my board.
Dotson,
Coleman-Treadwell.
Coleman-Treadwell, that's it.
And so I have Fuller off my board already to the Texans, and Coleman not.
Okay.
I'm amazed. If you think about the whole draft process, the other big takeaway from looking at your mocks, I mean, at the end of the Senior Bowl week, Noah Spence was a top 10 can't-miss prospect.
Yep.
And now we're talking about him in that 18 to 32
I had him go 20,
range.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, boy, if he slides that far, I really think that's a big steal for somebody.
And Zagura talked about it last segment. Someone has a mock with Bosa going 16th. This is a guy following the college football national championship, we'll say, that was by far and away the number one prospect in the draft, linking him to the Tennessee Titans.
It's just amazing how these things change, and sometimes it makes you wonder, like, is there just too much time? Is there just too much time that passes in these things? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, really, at the end of the day, is there just too much time?
Right. I mean, think about it. Okay, Bosa, number one. Ramsey wants to go home to Tennessee. Then Laramie Tunsil's linked in, you know, consistently for probably the last 30 days, and now they don't even draft in the top 10.
Kind of boggles the old mind.
And the names that they were considering are not even in the conversation at 15.
It kind of boggles the old mind at the end of the day.
Here's my question, going back to the wideouts. Is there really that much separation between any of these guys? Treadwell's come back to the pack with everybody, I feel like. Treadwell, Coleman, Dotson.
I think it's much more of a personal preference on what you're looking for stylistically out of your wide receiver. That's how I would say it. I think that there's a fall off though. I think that next group that's got, you know, the Michael Thomas, Will Fuller, Deontay Carew, Sterling Shepard. I think Carew would be in this first group if it weren't for the off-field issues. But I think that next group is a tier below.
Yeah, what's the kid? Is it Bearbridge, the kid out of Michigan State? When we were talking with the Michigan State fellow about mostly about Connor Cook, he was the guy that I think could sneak up on some people and probably be a solid second round pick and an immediate contributor.
Which guy?
Michigan State. Is it Bearbridge?
Oh, You think he gets? There's a lot of guys in that.
That's
in
what I mean.
Roger
but
Lewis,
he's in, yeah, that's what I meant.
Sharon Peaks.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a guy that, you know, as you took a liking to Allen Robinson, you know, that fell and went second round. To me, he's a guy highly productive at Michigan State that somebody's going to take, you know, in the second round or early third that could, I don't want to say be Allen Robinson, but contribute immediately. I think Michael Thomas might be a guy that could either go really high and be really productive or fall and still be productive.
I think it's interesting. I think from what I've heard, a lot of talent evaluators are very split on him. I've heard some talk about his attitude. I've heard some talk about stiffness. They don't know if he's not really a number one.
I could see watching the Buckeyes for the last 2 years, stiffness in his game.
Yeah, so how important is that in your mind?
It's very important to me. I think the fluidity of a wide receiver and their ability, you know, to run all the routes and to not be rigid and stiff changes a lot.
It's an important thing. It's how you get separation.
Yes.
Most important things be a receiver. Number one, catch the football. Number two, get separation.
Correct.
So your rigidity certainly is something that would play into that and be a major, major factor for you there. All right, we're going to wrap up. That's our mock draft. Last chance, final thoughts. What do you make of the trades around the NFL? What does this mean for the Browns? What do you hope it means for the Browns? Are you excited? Are you scared? Are you nervous? What do you think? We will see. We will see right after this on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs wrapping it up there. So, Gibbs, I just want to go back to something because I thought it was interesting how you said that you thought there was like such a run on wide receivers in what we did. How many receivers do you think are going to be in the first round?
I can't see more than three.
And those are, who are the three in Zagura's draft?
I would say Treadwell. I think Dotson sneaks in. And then someone surprises, whether it's Fuller, whether it's Thomas, whether it's Coleman, somewhere in there.
I don't think it would be considered
sneaking
to many if Coleman went in the first round. I don't think that'd be considered much of a surprise.
Really?
Yeah. Not at all.
I don't know.
I'm surprised that surprises you. Really?
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 I don't know. I'm not wowed by any of those guys. You know, that was Dotson I saw at the combine. Totally not impressed by him, size-wise.
You stood next to him and you didn't like what you saw?
He walked right past me. Scott Petrak and I standing right there. I was like, who was that? He goes, that's Dotson. I go, get out of here.
And you're like, I'm
out.
I
go, that's the guys that girl loves.
And is that because of size?
100%.
And to continue, I mean, and again, just strictly to continue the conversation, I know it's been reported. The Baylor receiver.
Corey Coleman.
5'11". Yeah.
Tenacious.
Small as well.
Compared to Steve Smith with his tenacity and his ability to win on contested catch situations.
Okay.
Plays bigger than he is.
It's great.
He does. Dotson plays bigger than he is, too.
How about give me someone over 6 feet?
Dotson is over 6 feet?
He is not.
We had this conversation
a month
ago. We
had this exact conversation.
Correct. And I will continue to dispute whoever is measuring people at the
Gibbs, you're 6'5", and you look down on most people, so your judge of what 6 foot is probably
Hold
a
on. I want to know, give me, okay, in your mind, give me the measurements for Josh Doctson. It's amazing if you're not good at this because we literally, this would be like deja vu radio. We literally have gone through this exact exercise.
I know we've had this conversation. Again, I think he's like 5'11", maybe 180.
What is he, 6'2" and a quarter? And what? 201? That's my guess.
Generous.
6'2", 205.
Generous.
Okay. I was five.
Generous.
Maybe
180?
Maybe 180.
That guy looks like he gets knocked down in a windstorm.
All right, hold on. You want to know what's so funny? So here's like, you know, they give like the analysis of the picks. Here's what Lance Zierlein said. Regardless, Dotson gives Teddy Bridgewater a big, consistent threat with amazing hand strength and body control. First word there was what? Big.
I beg to differ. I'm just saying, it's not that impressive in person.
That's what's so cool about it. Like just how people can experience the world in different ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just not the wow factor. That's all. I mean, that's hey. If we take him and he's a player, great. I don't care. But I'm just not. At first appearance, not sold.
Not sold.
Not sold.
That's your prerogative, bro.
Yeah. I do like the Coleman kid. I didn't realize the Coleman kid's only 5'11". I haven't seen him.
Yeah, Cole.
I haven't even seen him.
Can I just
5'11".
Ask you a question?
Yeah.
You just said something there that boggles my mind.
Perfect. Hey, other than the people that call and ask who Nathan wants to take a quarterback every day?
Yes. Do you know what you just said that boggles my mind?
I don't even know.
You said, I like the Coleman kid, and followed that up with, but I haven't seen him. So how the heck do you know you like
Not
the Coleman
like
kid?
I've seen him in person. Like,
oh, okay.
I didn't see him, you know.
Walking down the street.
Yeah, if he was in Berea, I didn't see him. If he was at the combine, I didn't see him that day.
On a side note, have either of you guys seen the Deadspin like piece on Jared Allen and this like stroll down memory lane?
No.
Okay. It's basically, it says Jared Allen told Ray Edwards, a former teammate of his, who was then, again, signed as a free agent to the Atlanta Falcons, I'm going to punch you square in your wiener, dude, before punching him square in the wiener. So essentially, Jared Allen was probably playing like a wing position or an end position on like field goal for the Minnesota Vikings. And Ray Edwards, of course, was playing the pass rush. I'm sorry, the rush squad. And Ray Edwards runs over Jared Allen. And the video is of Jared Allen on his back with Ray Edwards kind of like spread. Not, I mean, not on purpose, but with his legs split over top of him. And the video is literally of Jared Allen from his back punching up at Ray Edwards' wiener. And he goes, at least I gave you fair warning.
That is fair.
That is fair. What's funny to me is not only is it funny, but because it takes you inside the game, but it's little nuances like that that happen.
Yes.
In a football game that fans don't get to hear or understand, or the little smack talking that goes on in between plays as you walk past each other back to, you know, your huddles, and then you have to line up and go hit each other again and again and again for the next 60 minutes. Those things are what I miss about the game. Those are the things that you love about football. And in some cases,
that's the camaraderie right there.
That's the camaraderie. Out. That's the competitiveness. And it's also, I love that came out because it's the funny, but it's the rude and the crude things that are said that make the game great, that stay behind closed doors in the locker room, and why microphones and video cameras don't need to be everywhere.
Yeah. I think that's a very...
Because it keeps the game our game. And because essentially all it is a cash grab, and the NFL and the station or network's ability to monetize every single asset and take you into everywhere. And really then what's left sacred to us as players.
Yeah.
Because video phones and, you know, microphones and recorders are everywhere already. You can't go to a restaurant without getting asked for an autograph.
True.
So what do you have left? And I guess it's my play on them wanting to have videos and microphones in the locker room.
You think that should be that's hallowed ground.
That's hallowed ground.
Don't even come up in there.
Yeah, because it's you get into the and of course then you're left with a producer or content director, you know, hearing you talking about game planning and then it's on their discretion to use what they want to use and what they don't, and not essentially the team. That player, their depiction, and so on and so forth, because, you know, we're all signed off to the NFLPA or the NFL because our rights are gone.
Correct. Well, I'll tell you what. Not the day that I expected to have on the show today.
What did you expect? Just our mock
and calls and tweets. Lock and Four, some normal stuff, not the Rams.
Would we have had Lock and Four had this trade not gone down?
Yeah, yes. We had him because he had written the article on the Browns.
Okay.
And on their interest and all that stuff.
Well, it seems like everybody's written an article on the Browns. So
I guess that is also true.
Good, some bad.
Some good. Indeed. Indeed. That'll do it for us today. Who's up next, Gibbs? Is it Hooli again?
It's Emmett, Tony Cartagena.
Emmett and Tony Cartagena. Excellent. Well, certainly stay tuned for that here on ESPN 850. Want to thank Jason Locke and Fora. Want to thank the Rams for making this a very interesting day, and the Titans, of course, as well. For Jason Gibbs and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.